copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Many Christians are naive about what they expect. So, because I lived in the West a long time and lived in Egypt, I'm more realistic about what can happen and what can't happen. Egyptians tend to love to complain, and they tend to love to expect things that are impossible for them to have. So we complain about a lot of things in Egypt, but we don't realize the blessings we have. And we don't understand the problems that are really in the West. So Christians outside of Egypt will also always give a bad impression of Egypt. Be very careful of that, because they're guilty that they left. And so they want to justify why they left. So it has to be that Egypt is terrible. They will never say anything good about Egypt, because otherwise it'll mean that their departure was futile. And they probably sacrificed a lot. The guy who was a doctor is now a greeter at Walmart or something like this. So he sacrificed his whole life so that he get the freedom of West. How can you say that Egypt's good? He might as well have stayed there. So these people, Christians in Egypt, if they work for Christian organizations, think that the worst image they give, the more support they get. Yes. So they give you awful pictures. They don't want to give success story. You know, they don't want to say, okay, safe for me. I have no real problems. I'm not in as much danger as you. Someone yesterday, the British ambassador, had a friend visiting him from England. And this friend was telling me yesterday. And he said, it isn't dangerous. The British ambassador told me, it's more dangerous for you to cross the street in London than to come and visit Egypt. You could be run over by a car in London more easily than you'd be a terrorist attacked in Egypt. So people don't like to say bad news, because then you won't support us in Egypt. So we give you bad news, then you feel sorry. And a lot of money can be raised under the heading persecuted Christians. Not a lot of money can be raised about success stories of the church. So it's very complicated. I'm exaggerating, of course.
Oh, really?
Many people who are very balanced, but there's a lot of people who are not, and who expect too much. And we try within Egypt to do that correction also. So it's not just doing it for the outside. But we have an internal problem as well.
Well, it does raise the question of, you know, the responsibility of media professionals, you know, of how do we view our tasks, you know, in terms of being the ones who distributes information, who presents it, who perceives and angles, perspectives, everything. You know, it's really a very key question.
One of the best reporters in Egypt is a man who writes for Christianity Today, the American magazine. And you'll always find things on Egypt very balanced. He listens to me, he listens to people who disagree with me, he listens to others, and he puts it all together. So he will put the different sides of a picture in a very balanced way. Jason Casper, very balanced man.
But you need that source there in Egypt.
Yes. And he has good sources. Mm. He knows who to check. I'd be put in jail if I had interactions with Al Jazeera. They're persona non grata in Egypt, and anybody dealing with them is jailed. Yeah. Because if you read the Arabic website, they're only insulting the government, they're terrible. They're English. I watch Jazeera news in English, it's okay. But if you watch the Arabic, it's continual attack. And Qatar and Egypt are sworn enemies. So it's a very difficult situation. But they really, 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 they really are extremely biased. The issue of lifestyle is a worldwide issue. And I was asked last night just to say what I think is one of the greatest challenges the church faces. I don't see teaching on stewardship or lifestyle. Stewardship, not just, if you hear on stewardship, it's just because the church wants to build a building and wants you to give some money to their building. But I'm told, when I was a young university student, I was taught a lot about lifestyle. I was told I should dress in a way that I be non-noticeable in my group. So I should not dress under or above the group I'm with. That was extremely helpful. Because you don't know, especially women won't know what to wear and what not to wear. So dress in a way that people will not notice you. I'm not saying you don't dress nicely, because if you dress uglily, you will be noticed. And you know, so it's very careful. So that was a very good piece of advice that I learned when I was 17, and it's helped me. And I tell people that. Another thing was to live below your lifestyle, below your means. I mean, So if you could live at your salary here, go down a notch. So you're always living below, both because of the needs of the world, but also because it's a testimony, and because it protects you if someday your income goes down. The other thing, so it's a simpler, not a simple lifestyle. Mm-hmm. There's nothing called simple lifestyle, but there's a simpler lifestyle. The other principle was, if a government increases its taxes on you as your income goes up, then why do you always plateau at 10%? You should go up and up and up, so that it's what remains. The principle we are taught then, it's what remains. It's what you keep from your salary after the giving to God that counts, not what you get. So keep an eye on that one. And that principle helped me and my wife to continually increase the percentage of what we give as we are incoming. I don't hear any of this teaching. And I think that we have lost the idea of sacrificial giving, of balanced thing. So in my work at the Bible Society, I live way below my salary on purpose. I drive one of the oldest cars in the Bible Society to the frustration of all my staff. But it does mean we have 70 people in the building, and most all of them have cars that are, except for one, has cars that are nicer than mine. But I think it restrains them. If someone had the money to buy a Mercedes or BMW, they'd feel embarrassed because the boss doesn't. So it would just feel out of kilter. So I'm putting a dampener on their expenses. I do boast of the fact that I wear a lot of secondhand clothes and that kind of thing, you know, and that you don't usually do in Egypt. But my secretary the other day told me, you know, you've tried for 20 years, you should give up and enjoy yourself. But it's a continual struggle. My wife works with desperately poor people. People don't have enough to eat today. And she comes back from her time with these poor people devastated, you know, because she can't meet their needs. Awful stories. So how can we waste money or do something extra when there's so many poor people around us in the world? So I just think that's a very, very important point for Christians. I'm not saying you should all live the same level. I'm saying you should live simpler than you can. I think they consider us, when friends of mine are in trouble with the police, and they go in and tell, they say, why did you do like a Bible study? So they come and tell me, what do you do? The police like you. We are wise in not trying to provoke. And I'll give you one example that long time ago, we had to get a license for one of our bookshops in Alexandria. It was a new law. So we applied for a license and we didn't get it. It takes a long time in Egypt. So the city hall came to close down our bookshop. So our court of appeal is the security police, like the KGB. So our man running the bookshop ran to the secret police person and said, help, the city hall wants to close me down. So city hall picks up the policeman picks up the phone and phones city hall. And he said, why do you want to close down the Bible study? They say, because they don't have a license. He said, but they applied for one. He said, yes, but my regulations say, if they don't have one, I close them down. I don't care if they applied or they didn't apply. So a policeman turns over to, the policeman tells him, first of all, do you know that you cannot close down the Bible society in Alexandria? And the city hall guy tells him, why? He said, because this is the only source of Bibles for all the Christians in Alexandria. You will create a problem in all Alexandria if you, it's worse than closing the biggest church in the city, because that is their supply of a Bible. Now, it was very interesting for me to have that reported, to see how they view us. So the city hall, the policeman did what I just told you. He saw the problem and he solved it. He said, look, he told our staff member, very typically Egyptian, he said, when do you close? He said, we close Sunday. When do you close on Saturday? He said, 8 o'clock. So he tells the city hall, at 8 o'clock, you go and you seal and close the Bible study. They put a seal stamp to and close it completely. So our guy was shocked. And he said, don't worry. He said, on Monday morning, I'm sending my man to break the seal.
that's wonderful. Just simply wonderful. You know, I think where does creativity and humor come from? From Egypt, yeah?
We don't take ourselves too seriously.
No, that's right. That's wonderful. And I think that's something to learn there. You know, it's so easily to get puffed up, you know, in a very inadequate way.
Why would my government must? I mean, our president gave 7 days mourning to Egypt when these Libyan guys died. He gave 3 days mourning for the king of Saudi Arabia. No, we have a very, very supportive president. We have a very supportive government. We feel more supported now than any time in recent history since Nasser took over, since the king abdicated, you know. And Egyptian Christians feel very supported by the government. It doesn't mean that every government official is supportive. But it means that the cabinet, the parliament, and the president are very supportive of it. There are people in society, some of them who implement these laws, who are not supportive. But we feel that the leadership of Egypt is extremely supportive to Christians. They couldn't be more supportive. When welcoming Pope Paul, he got an incredible, Pope Francis got an incredible welcome. Billboards everywhere. The president met him several times. He spoke at the Azhar. He spoke everywhere. He's a clergyman. I mean, you don't do that. And the Sheikh of the Azhar said in a recent thing, and that's, I mean, he's a man who's very, very Muslim. He heads up all the Sunni Muslims in the world, who are 85% of the Muslims in the world are Sunni. And their spiritual head, supposedly, is the Sheikh of the Azhar, the Grand Sheikh of the Azhar. And he said, we believe in the Christian faith as being one of the religions that Islam recognizes. So he said, we believe the house is a house of worship. And we believe to respect it. And so on and so forth. Well, that's very encouraging. The government, it's impossible. Any more than the British Army could have protected that. We have policemen in front of every church. But the guy can come along and kill the two policemen and then destroy the church. How many policemen do you want? We have 5,000 churches. How many policemen do you want for 24 hours in front of every church? And then it's a bit intimidating to have policemen with guns in front of churches. I mean, we don't want to have 10 of them. So when there's an occasion, they can't put 10 policemen with tanks in front of it. And even if they do that, a suicide bomber could run while they're having their cup of tea or things. Egyptians aren't very good security people anyway. And could do something. Or you could throw a grenade from over the wall. So it's an impossibility.
Yes.
You know? So I think they do the reason now we have not had a tourist incident in 5-6 years is because we have a police state. And the very criticism of Egypt now is you have an army and police state. But when Trump says be tougher on the terrorists, what does he expect? You have to have a police state. You have to have more policemen. You have to suspect everybody. So it's a catch-22 when Christians say, we want more protection. And then they say, we should have more democracy and more freedom. Well, what do you want? You know, police, by definition, have to suspect everybody of being a terrorist. Because they're all Egyptians. I mean, and it's not as though in the West you do this profiling. Because this guy looks Arab. Oh, we suspect him. But in Egypt, everybody looks Arab. So you have 90 million suspected. So you should have a policeman for every citizen.
It's wonderful, yeah. But, you know, it seems to me that the role then of the Bible... I'm coming to you in a minute. The role of the Bible society then is seen as a service provider to the Christians. Is that right?
Yes. We basically supply the ammunition for the Christians to use in their ministry and their life.
From the perspective of the government, I mean.
From the government, they respect the Injil, and they have not stopped us from putting ads.
Injil being the...
Yeah, the gospel.
The gospel, yeah.
They have not stopped us from putting advertisements on newspapers and so on for a very simple reason. The government in the past used to play the denominations against each other. So that weakened the Christian presence in the country. Now that the government now that the Christian leaders work well together and they relate well to the government knows very well that the Bible Society is respected and loved by every church in Egypt. We do not get any criticism, frankly. And this is just by God's grace. So they, like that man when he told the City Hall guy, you cannot close the Bible Society. He doesn't want to cause problems. He has maybe, 500,000 Christians in Alexandria. He doesn't want them to be upset at him. It becomes a social problem. If a Christian upset, keep the Christians at peace. You don't want them coming in the streets and doing demonstrations.
No.
So why do something to provoke the Christians? So to close the Bible Society would be seen as provoking the Christians.
As a provocative action.
It's an extreme action.
Yeah.
Now, so they don't want trouble. It's not that they want to support Christians. It's just a political decision.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that the freedom we have to put a billboard on a highway is that that billboard is for 10 million people. If you look at potentially, if you want to advertise the BMW, how many potential BMW buyers would you have in Egypt? Probably 10,000, not 10 million. So you can put a BMW on a billboard, but it's not going to address the whole of a country. Or even if you put a photocopying machine, how many people are going to buy a photocopy machine? But 10 million people are customers for Bibles. Let's say 8 million of them, because the children, the very small children may not. So we tell them that. We tell, look, I've got 10 million people. And I'm putting one advert for him. He thinks about it. He says, okay. So that's the argument for you.
Yes.
The most powerful media on 40s and up are these talk show anchors. Because they critique. So all my staff, when they come in the morning, say, did you hear this person? Did you hear this person? Did you hear this? I haven't heard anybody. So I had my secretary get the clips for me, you know. And when I saw this clip, I went crazy. I said it was just, it's a kind of thing. So we subtitled it and sent it out. So that is the storm. The second thing is internet. We are the second, percentage-wise, the second users of Facebook worldwide. And we do what John Lennox does. Egyptians waste their time on Facebook terribly. You know, I blew my nose and I said hello. But incredible use of Facebook. WhatsApp is used for everything in Egypt. So we're very much social media is a second thing. You get these things sent very quickly and you read them and they communicate. So I would say social media, but it's with the young. But the young don't influence policies. So the 40 and up who influence policy and decision making, it's these anchor people. They form opinion. They're opinion shapers. Mm.
So you're saying the talk shows are actually a place where critique is happening?
Yes, yes. Now,
That's very interesting, isn't it?
The point is, those who were most interesting now have been stopped, and we don't quite know why.
Okay.
So there are two, we're very disappointed by some of them that have been stopped. And I think it's a miscalculation on the government's part to allow that stopping. But we still have enough critique. In those that the people are, nobody's going to watch us.